Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm excited to announce that I have back on the line with me Doc Jones, private investor, well known to a lot of you precious metals investors who are very active on some of the sector blogs and chat rooms, as Doc Jones shares a lot of his insights on some of the companies that he is following. I actually have posted some of Doc Jones' reports too, and I will keep on doing those. But Doc, let's talk broadly about the gold sector then, because gold still very much under pressure. The gold stocks are continuing to see some downward pressure. I know some people are saying, well, my stocks are holding up better than the gold price. But either way, I feel like we're nitpicking some of these details as all of these are moving down broadly, gold and the gold stocks. Doc, what do you think? What's your outlook for the gold or the gold price and gold stocks broadly as we progress into summer and even through the rest of this year?
Oh, hey, Corey, thank you for having me back. I would say the way I look at the gold market right now, I prepared my portfolio for gold bottoming out around 1500, 1550 sometime in the third quarter, going into the fourth quarter. The reason for that is that interest rates, I think, will continue to rise slowly. The U.S. government has a lot of debt that they got to sell, and there's going to be pressure in the market, meaning rising yields, to get that debt sold. Yeah. Beyond that, like juniors, I think the most pressure you're going to see is probably on the producers, and the reason for that is that when you do the comps between this year and last year they will have a higher realized price. They will also have lower input costs. Energy prices have gone up considerably, so anyone who's running an open pit mine right now is going to be feeling a lot of pain. Their margins will be compressed, as well as if they're carrying any debt, like on a term facility that floats to the rates that are in the market. Interest rates have gone up considerably as well. So that's going to be a detriment, how they're perceived in the marketplace with declining earnings, declining margins. The explorers, I think, will fare better, flat. A discovery always pays. I think a company that has a resource that is mineable and profitable at $1,500 gold, in the ground, will do very well compared to others. Then once we get into the fourth quarter, I see gold prices starting to make their slow climb up, and I think that will be due to an exhaustion of stimulus. I think the expectations of this coming online and also the green economy, that feels a little frothy right now. People have been piling into, nickel, for example. That demand is primarily from steel, right? There's people investing in that, thinking about the green economy, but that's years and years away. The incremental demand from nickel currently and over the next few years for EVs is not going to be as people think. You have to just look at the figures. So nickel demand is driven by steel and will be for the next foreseeable future.
So, Doc, doesn't this speak to the bigger market here in, let's call it, commodities, where money has rotated within the commodities? It's just rotated out of gold simply because, well, gold's in a downtrend. And yes, people are more enthusiastic, more optimistic about an economic restart. To your comment, though, about the majors being hurt more than the juniors, can you make the argument that a lot of the big money has already left the sector? The majors started to show this weakness even before the gold price significantly broke down. So who in your eyes is even really left to sell some of these majors?
Retail investors. There are some of the, pension funds and institutional investors, when they close their quarter and they've got to show their books to their clients. Their clients may not want to see those companies on their books. They will have a certain amount of support, yield support, like the majors that do pay a nice dividend, like B2 has it. I think they're paying like 3% right now. Compared to the 10-year, that's pretty great, but the 10-year is rising. So if we get a 10-year print of a 2%, then that is no longer, as competitive when you consider the risk-free rate, it's going to be 2%. And I think the government will allow interest rates to run hot because there's an arbitrage between real inflation and the interest rate. So let's say that real inflation is 6-7%, but the 10 years 2%, there's still a 5% arbitrage, which the government can try to make up through tax revenues as long as the economy is expanding. If the economy is expanding from stimulus, then that means there's more demand on energy and base materials, which will be the beneficiary of that, not so much precious metals.
Okay, to that point, I want you to address a narrative that is always in the precious metals blogs and sphere. That comes from the permabulls that say, well, all this printing of money, it helps gold. It will always help gold. Gold works off of overall money supply. And, well, look at how much money we're getting printed. That's going to eventually filter into gold. I've heard that argument for decades now, and while we have had runs in the precious metals, the prices that some of these bulls point to as to where gold should be trading because of all the money printed, we're way off of those levels. And quite frankly, I find those more as marketing pitches than anything. What's your answer to that contingent out there that says, look at all the money that's been printed, gold should be, well, X times higher?
Money supply is not, gold prices have never been directly correlated to money supply. The money supply has grown exponentially in the last few decades, where the gold price has not, right? And currently, right now, we don't have the multiplier effect. The money's not being recycled. So there's a lot of money in the system. So until it starts getting recycled, then you'll have inflation, right? You'll have a lot more inflation, which will be positive for gold to a certain degree. But if you have a backdrop of higher interest rates, in the near term, in the long term, I think gold prices are going to be much higher. You know, I think 2022 is when we're going to see cracks in around the world, which will be very positive for gold. You know, plus people have to also remember where we come, right? You know, like gold went up to almost 2100, but now it's 16. Say it goes down to 15 compared to the past 5 years. That's not a bad price. You know, so it has been a store of value in that regard. But yeah, you know, the biggest, in my opinion, that determines gold price is interest rates and also money supply in relation to it being cycled through the economies. Right now, the money is going to the banks and staying at the banks. So it's not really filtering through the economy. You don't get the fractional reserve effect where a dollar is printed, put in the bank, somebody borrows it, and then it's put out in the economy times 10 and then times 10 times 10. That's not happening yet. I see that happening later on, but just currently not right now. And I think because the stimulus is on the horizon and it seems to be a foregone conclusion that $2-3 billion is going to hit the market, that given the choice of investing in something that is, you know, hurts when you drop it on your foot, so to speak, I think people are going to gravitate towards copper, steel, you know, nickel, for example, energy, because energy is the one thing that's directly correlated to GDP growth. You know, the consumption of energy is directly related to that as far as fossil fuels currently, electricity generation, people moving stuff around. It's still a fossil fuel economy and will be for a very long time. And then also outside of that, the petrocides, you were coming into planting season too, which is going to require a lot of petrocides and petrochemicals, as well as anything paint. How many products are made from petroleum products? You know, thousands and thousands and thousands that all go into things that you would characterize as infrastructure.
Okay, so it sounds like you're seeing some opportunities in the energy sector. We'll get into that quickly, but first, when it comes to some of the explorers that you're focusing on, then what are some of the characteristics you want to see in these explorers, understanding that you still do have that outlook for precious metals broadly is not really doing much until the fourth quarter at the earliest?
Good question. That's a really good question. Yeah, by no means am I saying abandon the sector. I think you really have to be selective. Like last year, you could throw a dart, and if it was a gold stock, you did well. You know, that last year was a concern of how can I obtain the most upside I can, whereas this year, it's more about preserving your capital and looking out for your downside. And how you do that, in particular in the juniors, you need a great management team, a great project, right? They should be already cashed up for at least the next drill season or two. Including their G&A, right? if a company has to go to market to raise capital now, it's going to be a lot harder. It's going to be very dilutive. And as well, myself, the only investments I'm making now in the gold sector are companies that either have a resource that is mineable at $1,500 gold, provides a great margin, or a company like, you know, Tarachi, which we've talked about, that has a path to cash flow so that it can create a vehicle that's non-dilutive to provide the capital for exploration. So you take a company like, you know, Cassiar, which the CEO said on a webinar that they have 1.5 million ounces, but it was walked back. So in any event, if you do the math on that, you've got a deposit that's 1.6, 1.7 grams, 1.5 million ounces within 100 meters of surface, free milling, so it's not complex. So the margins on something like that, probably all in sustaining costs, building a mill would probably be around $700, $800. So you have a healthy margin of 1,500 gold. And then fundamentally, yep, it's got set almost $7 million. So they're cashed up for almost 20,000 meter drill program to expand and define new resources. So if you do some simple calculations on market cap or enterprise value versus the ounces in the ground, you're paying like $12 an ounce of a mineable ounce, not some ounce that's maybe mineable in 5 years when the gold price is $3,000. No, you're paying $12 for an ounce that has a margin on it of at $1,500 gold of about $800. So that's a value proposition that I have a watch list for those type of companies. And I do keep 5 to 10% cash in my account to be opportunistic during these times, because there is a lot of people that will leave things for dead, and because the liquidity in the market dries up, people will sell their stock at such an awful loss because they just get frustrated and they don't have patience. And really, that's like what Warren Buffett said, the stock market is a wealth transferring mechanism from the impatient to the patient. So if you can find the good companies right now, the explorers, that also are going to weather the storm a lot better because their overhead is a lot lower than a producer who's having declining margins. You know, they can, some of them can just basically just keep the lights on and warehouse cash until the market improves and still preserve the capital structure and not dilute the hell out of the shareholders. Whereas you may see the producers have to go to the market and raise money because their margins have declined. They've got covenants on their debt where they have to maintain a certain amount of liquidity or whatnot. And so they will raise capital more so than a cashed up explorer that has a great project. They can go, you know, we'll just sit on this project for 6 months or a year. You know, the gold's not going anywhere. And over that year, we're going to burn $400,000 or $500,000 of our $8,000, $8 million treasury. We'll still come out of this during the up cycle and still have over $7 million in cash to create shareholder value, you know. So, and also they will just drill it. They will also drill it anyways, because an explorer right now, if they find anything, it's not going to be a mine for at least, what, 7, 8, 9 years. So they can drill something out now and uncover, you know, a couple million ounces. And that'll be worth something to the market, you know, especially if it's a high margin project, right?
That's the thing, right? They can create value with the drill bit when it comes to these mining companies. If you're in an environment with a declining metals price and higher energy costs, your margins are just getting evaporated there. So I understand that whole outlook. And one thing to consider is that a lot of these juniors are still cashed up. There is still money being raised, which is, I think, optimistic or positive in a sense for people invested here. Let's wrap it up then, Doc Jones, with a quick comment on one of the sectors I know that is interesting you. That's the energy sector. Where are you focusing and why, please?
Well, currently I'm deploying a lot of capital into Canada, and the reason for that is the Canadian producers are realizing some of the best prices for oil that they've had in 6-7 years. They have been left for dead, right? There are many companies out there that you can buy today that at 1 or 2 times free cash flow based on the current prices. It's like, it's like there's this one play up in northern Alberta, the Clearwater oil play. There's companies operating out there. It's a little known one. It was discovered in 2018-17 going into the declining market and then COVID and whatnot. But up there, these companies, they at today's oil price, they drill these wells for $1.4 million. They come on stream at about 200, 220, 230 barrels a day. And they're open hole completions. They don't need frack fluid. They're not fracking them. They don't need thermal to make the oil flow. And the IRRs on these wells up there are over 400% in today's oil price in the tier one acreage. And even the tier three acreage, the current IRRs there are exceeding 250%. And you're seeing companies gravitate up there. There's been a lot of acquisitions going on up there, people buying properties, especially during the distressed times. There's one company on the TFX that they just spent $300 million acquiring acreage up there all through the downturn. They leveraged, they went to the bank to borrow money to do it because it's so profitable up there. And a lot of the ground up there has been historically held by private companies because they don't want to go public because they're making so much money to begin with. Especially if you look at the future of Canadian fossil fuels, our neighbor, which was historically our the market we could only export to the United States, they are currently going to be very challenged to bring on a lot of production. In the past, the United States saved the world from peak oil through shale development. But currently what you have is you have banks have tightened up credit on them. You have a Biden administration that has a moratorium on horizontal fracking on government land. So you're not going to see a lot of companies going to the bank borrowing a few hundred million dollars to start an oil company in the Permian Basin. Plus, the natural gas market, you've got Canada's building export capacity. It's going to take 20% of the gas we produce today and ship it out of country. When you remove 20% of the supply from a market, if you do your supply and demand curves and, you know, economics and university or whatnot, you have to move that price, right? So you're going to see stronger prices in natural gas going forward that we didn't have before. So, yeah, it's an incredible time. Like, there are companies like, you know, One of my favorite investments is i3 Energy in Canada, which is a new company that came public during the downturn through a reverse takeover of two other companies that were struggling under the debt they had. Because you remember, in 2000, we had prices collapse to negative oil prices, right? So what this company did from the UK came in, they bought up all this distressed debt for like 12 cents on the dollar and then took over the company. And they paid less than one times the free cash flow they will earn this year from those assets. And those assets will produce for decades. Like, it's incredible. Like, people were buying stuff. Like, the smart investors out there were buying up these properties in Canada and just banking them. So, yeah, I think the best opportunity right now is in energy compared to the runs we've already had in copper and iron ore and timber. So that's where I would be looking right now. But, you know, not all companies are created equal, so you've got to do your homework, look at their balance sheets, make sure they're not leveraged, because there are some that are leveraged up already in Canada, and so the free cash flow is going to go to servicing the debt and lowering their overall leverage profile versus expanding production. So you want a company that has very little leverage and also has not pre-hedged all their oil and gas for the next year or so, and they're not taking advantage of these prices, right? There are some companies out there that are open. They have no hedging, and they're like, it's amazing the amount of money that they are making. Like, you know, you operate in Clearwater, 400+% IRRs. The wells pay out in 5 months. 5 months. Can you imagine that? Oh my God. And then they produce for years and years and years and years, cash flowing. It's incredible. And there is a demand, like the oil market is going to be in a structural deficit pretty soon, I believe. You know, OPEC and OPEC Plus with Russia, they didn't raise production. They're extending the production cuts through April, right? And we're coming into summer driving season. The economies are reopening. And there's a backlog of work out there of people that are going to be consuming. You've got air conditioners and people driving on their own and jet fuel, all these things, right? So it's going to, and also, you know, just the heavier stuff, you know, anytime they build a road or whatnot, that's a petrochemical. That comes from the petroleum industry. Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. They're working down the supplies globally. And you have to ask yourself, do you really think OPEC wants lower prices? Especially when Biden has come out and said, by the way, we're going to find a way not to use your product ever again in the next 10, 20 years. Those countries are highly dependent. Russia, Saudi Arabia, all the countries in OPEC, they're dependent on that revenue. They don't have anything else. As far as what are they going to export then, right? So this transition is not going to be as quick as people think. Even if you took out driving, you know, gasoline from, you'd still have demand of over 50 million barrels a day and growing, because as population grows, so does energy consumption. And also without the drilling in the Permian Basin, which is primarily for oil and the byproduct there with natural gas, now that drilling's not going on, you're going to have a deficit of natural gas in the United States. Right now, they're net short gas because the injection season didn't go as well as they thought it would go historically, plus what happened in Texas. You know, it's going to be a great market for energy the next few years, especially with GDP being goosed globally by all the stimulus, because you can't have GDP growth without energy consumption. And currently, energy consumption equals oil, natural gas.
Yeah. Well, there you go. No, I understand the bullish outlook, but I also think your comments there of having to do the research on these oil stocks, because they are not all created equal and some are carrying very high debt loads. And quite frankly, you need to understand the different jurisdictional aspects when it comes to Canada and the U.S., some of the benefits that the Canadian oil industry has right now. But yeah, you do need to look into these companies, because some have already started to run and there still is value out there, especially if you have that outlook that you do, Doc Jones, of not a, let's call it, collapsing oil price in the near term in front of us. So, hey, something to consider. Always interesting chatting with you, Doc Jones. Thank you again for taking some time on this show. I hope everybody is enjoying these conversations. We got a lot of positive comments after the last one. So I'm going to keep bringing Doc Jones on because I find him a very interesting individual. And hey, well, you're very honest with us, Doc. I really appreciate all of your insights. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and I will be chatting with you again in another couple weeks. Thank you, Doc Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. It was a pleasure, as always.